Week 121 of Brada's Branded Thoughts. And I'm joined by Alex Brada this week. We're flying in as a duo for this edition of the podcast. And we've got lots to talk about. A very, very interesting interview coming up for our listeners here in a few minutes. But Alex, welcome back to the show. And a lot's happened in the last, 2 weeks, week and a half since our last show in terms of news and developments. One thing I want to get to before we start talking about football, because that's going to be the focus of our show, is Luka Garza. We've been waiting for a decision from this young man. We know that the deadline to withdraw his name from the NBA draft got extended to August 3rd. Frank Garza, his father, has been very vocal about how he doesn't feel that's enough time. I happen to agree with him. There have been no opportunities for Luka to have in-person workouts. And Frank has expressed pretty publicly that if Luka's not able to be guaranteed an NBA spot, and Luka said the same thing, if Luka's not able to be guaranteed an NBA spot next year, he's not going to the NBA. But he's also expressed that Luka will be more inclined, I guess is the right word, to take a pro deal, whether that be overseas or in the U.S., if we're not playing college ball next year. And so as this coronavirus thing comes on, I think we're going to come to the conclusion throughout the show, as I was thinking through that introduction that we did pre-podcast, I'm thinking, you know, this is a pretty darn pivotal time for Hawkeye fans. I mean, sports fans in general, but for Hawkeye fans. I mean, talk a little bit about what these next couple of weeks mean. We know August 3rd is the deadline. Frank has come out and said Luka will decide on August 2nd. So we don't have to check Twitter every 5 seconds, not to say I ever was, but we don't have to do that. We know the decision's coming August 2nd. I mean, we're getting down to crunch time. What do you think? What's going to happen with Luka's decision?
Well, I agree that it is a pivotal time as far as what'll happen. I don't know. I kind of like you were talking about with Frank Garza. I don't think that they're going to have any better idea in the next couple weeks than they do now necessarily as far as the state of college basketball for next season. I don't see how that's going to change. So I don't know. I mean, I think they're probably going to have to make a decision that they're not totally comfortable with, because they won't know all the variables that are going to come up. And they're just going to have to make a bit of an uninformed decision, which is going to be tough.
Isaiah Livers of Michigan announced this week that he is returning to Michigan. So that's good news for the Wolverines. Similar position to Luka. I mean, guy that really wanted to be able to get workouts in front of NBA teams, wasn't able to do that. A guy who was just on the edge of you know, late second round, and as far as mock drafts go. And so very similar to Luka, and he decides to return to Michigan. This whole time I've been kind of back and forth. I'd say I've fluctuated between, 70% sure down to like 45% sure that he's coming back. I mean, I kind of went back and forth, but I'd say the majority of the time I've been pretty certain. Again, I'm just guessing like anybody else. I think he's coming back. Frank, if you hear Frank, he was on David Eicholt's podcast, the Swarmcast, 247 Sports. And he talked here recently about just, the situation with the coronavirus and what Luka's options are. Frank's sort of an interesting guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. If you know anything about Frank, you've heard interviews with Frank. I don't want to say he's not a hippie. I'm not calling him a hippie, but he's very, very, seems like a very nice guy. But he's just sort of out there. He's got interesting thinking, and that's not an insult by any means. He's a very innovative thinker. He tries to stay in tune with everything, if that makes sense. You get where I'm going with this? He's just kind of you listen to him talk, and it's hard for me to really get a read on him, if that makes sense. Whereas you listen to a guy like Luka, a young guy, he's pretty down to earth. You know where I'm going with this? I don't know how much you've heard Frank talk, but it's hard to really get a read on him when he talks about Luka's decision.
I don't think I've ever heard him talk, but I catch your drift.
So again, August 2nd's the day that has been announced since our last show. I mean, we hope to be on. I think we are going to do another podcast next weekend and talk NBA bubble. But if you're looking at this from the lens of, if you had to guess right now, and we'll talk again about it next week, does Luka come back or is he gone?
Oh man, I'm not going to be definite leaning either way. I think I'm leaning towards him coming back, but who knows how much of that is just wishful thinking? Because it, like we've said before, you know, so much of Iowa's next season hinges on his decision. Because you know they're talking about Iowa being what top five preseason rankings, which is pretty much unheard of for any sport other than wrestling and in the Iowa program. So, you know, it's just a huge factor. And so it's hard to say if my own bias is creeping into that. I'm still leaning towards him coming back, but if I had to put a percentage on it, I'd say maybe up to 70-30, but that's probably as high as I'd go.
Other news this week that came out of the NBA was Jared Uthoff. Great news for him. He inked a deal with the Washington Wizards. The Wizards basically don't have much of a chance to make the playoffs. I mean, they're 5.5 games out. But Jared Uthoff's going to be with the Wizards. Great news for him. Who knows if it'll stick. It may just be a short-term deal. But there's an Iowa player on an NBA roster. You also have Tyler Cook. He inked a deal with the Denver Nuggets, the team that he was originally with before all this started and before his tenure with the Cavaliers. So both guys, theoretically, are going to be, well, not theoretically, they are on NBA rosters heading into the bubble. How great is that? I mean, I know we've been talking about how much Iowa, Fran, they need somebody to stick in the NBA from a recruiting standpoint and for an image standpoint. How big is that? The two guys that, you know, I know we've kind of talked about Tyler Cook as far as, you know, maybe never fulfilling that potential. Very athletic, obviously. He's been very successful his first year in the G League. But, I mean, how big is that for him and Jared Uthoff to ink deals, not only for themselves, but for the image of the Iowa basketball program?
Yeah, I mean, especially if they were to establish themselves, that's got to be huge, because that's, in my opinion, pretty much Iowa's biggest challenge to overcome, especially in basketball. In football, it's more, you know, there's a lot more representation in the NFL, at least at certain positions. So, you know, as far as Tyler Cook, I think he's still young. He still hasn't, from what I've seen, fulfilled his potential in the least bit. I think he has still tremendous potential that he hasn't fulfilled, but he's a super young guy still, and he's got a lot of time. And with Uthoff, you know, the Wizards are an interesting situation. They're in a different situation than the Nuggets because they're not really in contention. They're kind of holding out until they get John Wall back, which has been like a multi-year project, getting him healthy, which he's still not going to be back until next season. So, you know, he should get time. I mean, he's a scorer. He should get time. He should get a small role, and hopefully he can, you know, expand on that.
I sure hope he gets minutes. I know he's considered what they call a substitute player. I don't know exactly what that means with this bubble. I've never really heard that term. You know,
I don't know if that's like an alternate force if and when players get taken out because they get infected with the virus.
Well, and it's gonna that's gonna happen, isn't it? I mean, I think that's inevitable. Guys are gonna get sick. I know they're in this bubble, but I still think guys are gonna get infected.
Yeah,
and I'm not rooting for guys to get the virus, but this guy does. Jared, I love Jared Uthoff, one of my favorite players in my lifetime to play at Iowa, and you know, he's been terrific as far as overseas. His time in the G League. Remember, he had a little stint with Dallas a couple of years back when Dallas was really struggling. He got a decent amount of minutes. I just hope he sticks. I know people knock him for not being the strongest guy, but very long, can shoot threes. We know about his ability to fade away, and you know, can get blocks and is fairly athletic. I mean, for a 6'9", 6'10" guy, I look at this guy and I think, you know, I think he could stick in the NBA, and I've said that since day one. Hasn't happened, but I certainly admire his stick-to-itiveness. And as far as Tyler Cook goes, I mean, what do you foresee for him? I mean, he's exceeded my expectations as far as the NBA. I thought he left probably too early as far as you and I think we're pretty upfront about. I wasn't too beat up with the fact that Tyler Cook left early for the NBA last year, simply because I think in some ways, and I know I'm not saying necessarily it's addition by subtraction last year, but I think it was proven too with Luka's emergence, and partly I think most of that is just Luka's ability to work hard during the offseason and improve. But I do think Tyler Cook sort of stole the show as far as, you know, they ran the offense through him. Luka took over last year. And I don't think he would have been able to do that, at least not to the degree that he did with Tyler Cook. I don't know that they would have been any better with Tyler Cook last year. I mean, maybe that's a stupid thing to say. Maybe they would have been a lot better. Maybe they would have been a top 10 team last year. I don't know, but he's exceeded my expectations in the NBA with these two-way deals that he's gotten. He's been basically in the NBA his entire rookie season.
I mean, I think it's hard to say. If he had stuck around for this past season, he would have had to either improve a lot or basically change his role on the team, because he was definitely not going to be a first-option guy, which he never should have been. Not that that's not what Iowa needed at certain times, but the fact they were in that position wasn't great just because he had such big holes in his game. So I don't know if they would have been worse with him. I don't see McCaffrey as being a guy who's going to, you know, not change the offense around the emergence of new talent like Garza. I think he probably could have put Cook in a role that would have worked. And it would have been up to Cook to accept that, which I think he probably would have. But yeah, I mean, it's nice to see him at least get a chance in the NBA. You know, he's in the same division as, you know, Denver's in the same division as Utah. And so I tend to see a lot of those games. So I haven't seen him play yet, but it would be nice to see him on an NBA court.
And again, a guy very successful in the G League. So I don't know. It's exciting to see. Jared Utoff was one of the best G League players this year. So his time was going to come. I just, you know, you hope one of these guys sticks. Selfishly, I want Jared to stick. I want both of them to stick, but I think that's just great news. And we'll see what happens. I think crazy things could happen in the bubble, and it's going to be fun to watch here later this month and into August. Let's transition a little bit over to what's happened in the world of coronavirus and football. Has your opinion changed at all since our last podcast? Again, that was almost 2 weeks ago. Has your opinion at all changed about our hopes for a season? We're sitting here recording on July 18th, and the Big Ten did announce, right after we recorded our last show, they announced that the conference would be playing conference-only games. That was the first ball to drop, and then the Pac-12 announced the same thing. So you can forget the first three non-conference games, Northern Illinois, Iowa State, and Northern Iowa. Theoretically, it sounds like they will replace one of those non-conference games with a 10th conference game, but it will be a shortened season if it's played. But are you at all changed as far as your opinion since we talked last?
I can safely say no. I don't think anything has really changed enough as far as this pandemic is going that it would change my opinion of how the season's going to play out, if it plays out at all. You know, the conference only thing was a pretty minimal step. I think obviously it was a good step to take, but I don't think it'll be enough to save the season personally. But
so you, yeah, do you think it ain't happening?
Well, I think if it does happen, it's just going to be messy, and it's going to peter out pretty quickly is my opinion. I think it's just going to be hard. You know, when you have, I think pro sports in general, I could safely say I think pro sports have a chance, NBA and NFL, but college sports are so much bigger. So many more people, all this stuff, especially football, you know, there's just so many players, but, and staff, but, there's just so many guys to try and keep them isolated. You see all the measures that Adam Silver's taking with the NBA. And I mean, they've got these guys cooped up in hotel rooms, essentially not able to be in contact with the outside world. There's doubts as to how effective that's going to be. And I just don't see anything less than that even being able to stop any kind of infections. So I think once those infections start, if the season starts, once those infections start to hit, and I think they will, it's going to be a pretty quick.
Well, they're already hitting, though, and we've talked about this. They're already hitting. So players are already getting infected. So, you know, how much of the population is already infected? We don't know this. I thought it was interesting that the head guy from the CDC came out not that long ago and said that he thinks that 2 months ago, around 200,000 people were infected in the U.S. a day, per day. Okay. Numbers were like 20,000 as far as people who were tested positive. Right. So, you know, we've doubled and tripled our testing since then. as far as just anybody. I mean, when I say we, I mean everybody. We've been able to if you want to get a test right now here in Iowa, you can go down to Des Moines and get a test from Test Iowa. You don't have to have any symptoms. You don't have to be exposed to anybody or be someone that is, you know, impacted by old age or by a chronic illness. You can go and get tested, basically anybody right now in the state of Iowa. And it's funny, a few days ago, I texted everybody, the Krukos and you on this podcast, and, you know, was hopeful because we'd seen three straight days with national numbers going down. Well, since then, we've had four straight days of national numbers going up. We're now at 74,000 cases. Yesterday was 74,000 cases for the 24-hour period. And although I know that's going to be spread out specifically throughout certain sections of the country, think about what's happening in Miami right now. You know, there's an outbreak there, a huge outbreak, probably worse than New York, honestly, if you look at it from just the standpoint of the size of Miami compared to the size of New York. Miami's huge, but New York City is massive, we know. I guess it's just, I don't know how to weigh everything, because if there were 200,000 cases a day 2 months ago, and we've doubled and tripled testing, and anybody can get tested now, and now we're testing out about 74,000 cases a day, yes, it's gotten worse as far as a public perception standpoint, but have cases actually went up? I think that's my biggest question. I just don't know that cases have actually gone up, and I'm not saying that that bodes well or doesn't bode well for college football. I just don't think it's gotten worse over the last month, like maybe the public perception would have you, you know, would have you feel.
Well, I think, you know, there is more testing going on for sure, but if you look at other countries, you know, they're testing a lot more per, say, 100,000 people, so there are a lot of cases. The good news is that the death rate hasn't followed this positive cases trend as much, and I think that's there's multiple things going on. One, I think, is because there's more testing, you're just finding more asymptomatic cases, obviously. Along with that first factor, I think the second factor is they are figuring out how to treat this with certain steroids. And
there have been doctors that have come out and said that this is weakening as we go. Now, the same doctor said he thinks it could kill itself off. Other doctors don't agree with that, and who knows? We don't know. But there have been people in the science community that say that this is weakening as it mutates.
Well, I mean, I think it's important to differentiate between doctors. If you have somebody who's actually studying the RNA of a virus versus a doctor who's just treating patients, I mean, they're just going by what they're seeing by the eye test. So if I were to see, and I think it's been a couple months now, but there was a study about some deletion in the RNA code of this virus that maybe would have made it more contagious but less deadly, which could be considered weakening in a certain way anyways, and having different strains in different parts of the country and parts of the world. So viruses definitely mutate like that. So far, though, the pattern that I've seen, it doesn't seem, you know, I mean, if it is weakening, it's maybe weakening in its severity, but definitely not in contagiousness. So that's always possible. I'd just like to see some actual studies about that. But the thing is as far as that goes, I don't think it's really going to matter, because when it comes down to sports and stuff, yes, a lot of these athletes, like we've seen a flurry of NBA players, especially getting positive results, and there's been no trouble as far as them surviving this stuff. So people that are not in that risk age group, especially, you know, pro athletes who are in outrageous shape, they're pretty much not going to have a problem with this at all. But you have these older staff and coaches, and those people who aren't in great shape a lot of the times and who are not nearly as young. So those are the ones they're going to have to worry about protecting. And even if the death rate hasn't quite followed the positive cases rate, you still have that potential for affecting higher at-risk groups. So as far as how it'll affect sports, I'm not sure that it really matters.
Well, we're just playing a waiting game at this point. I do think we're going to have a season. I've told you, you know, I just hope that things don't just fall apart in the fall and we have a broken up season. I'd rather have a spring season. Obviously, I know there's other factors as far as player safety and whatnot. I mean, do you think once we hit the end of the year, we're going to have, I mean, we got to return to normalcy at some point. You talked about other countries. There are countries all over the world right now that are returning to normal completely. They have returned to normal and they don't have a vaccine. Newsflash, they don't have a vaccine. Okay. And I know that there's been more mitigation and whatnot. I'm not going to get into all this because then you get into, you know, you get into different discussions and we're not here to do that. But you are seeing more stores require masks, more grocery stores, different businesses, they're requiring masks. I did, you know, I was in Fairway today here in Ames, which is, if you don't live here in Iowa, you're listening to the show, it's just an Iowa grocery store chain. And most people were wearing a mask. Now, granted, there were some people that weren't wearing a mask. I don't understand it. I don't get it. You know, you can have whatever opinions you want. If you believe that, you know, it's not as serious as people think, whatever. But the point is, I think you would agree with this, Alex. Everybody can have different opinions about what they think, okay? And a lot of us, really none of us, unless we're in the scientific field, a lot of scientists don't even know. But the bottom line is, a lot of people are not wearing masks and not taking precautions. But what they're doing is damaging a lot of, whether you think it's serious or not, whether you think the numbers are skewed or not, if the numbers keep going up, it's going to hurt the perception and it's going to hurt our chances of returning to normalcy. It's going to hurt our chances of being able to get football, hurt our chances of being able to get basketball. And look, we've been dealing with this for several months now, but the cases are up to 74,000. And whether you think this graph that goes like this straight up, as it shows, if you go to the CDC's website, over the last month, if you think that's skewed and that's not accurate, you can have that opinion. But the bottom line is, if that graph looks like that, you're not getting sports this fall. And that's my biggest problem with people who are not wearing masks and not taking these precautions. And the mask is the biggest thing at this point. It's the biggest thing because almost everybody in the community, everybody in the media, again, whether you think it's legitimate or not, everybody agrees wearing masks is going to help us get by this and return to normalcy before getting a vaccine. We're not going to return to 100% normalcy, but a norm to where we can get football back. We can get basketball back, even if it's without fans. But if the numbers keep going up, those people who are failing to take precautions and are failing to help the numbers, even if they're asymptomatic numbers, you want to make that claim, you're failing to get those numbers down and you're damaging our chances of getting sports back this fall and winter. And for that, yeah, I'm very, very bitter about people not taking precautions. And it's so frustrating. And there is still time, but time is running out. And that's why I'm very happy businesses are making those decisions to require masks. You know, I don't think you're going to see that as far as a state mandate here in Iowa. I would be surprised if it ends up being a mandate. But people just got to take this seriously. They've got to take it seriously, whether you think it's serious or not. I'm not going to give my opinion on whether how serious I think it is. It's obviously serious. How serious? Whatever. We don't want to talk about that. Wear a mask. Get the numbers down. Again, whether you think they're skewed or not, get the numbers down if you care at all about being able to feel somewhat normal and get some entertainment, some sports. And we need this. We need sports as far as a distraction and, you know, something to get us off of this. This has been a rough year of 2020.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point and a good motivation to wear a mask if you're one of those people who doesn't see the need. Another one that to me is even more universal is, let's say this virus is only as bad as the seasonal flu, which is obviously not true. It's obviously more deadly, but let's just say that it is. The seasonal flu kills many, many people every year, especially in at-risk age groups. So even if you just admit that, even if you just go by the fact that the virus is as deadly as the flu, it's still going to kill a lot of old grandmas and grandpas. So by you not wearing a mask, you're endangering all those people. I don't get it. It's like, even if it shouldn't be mandated by law, if you're a person who's choosing not to wear a mask, you're not being kind to anyone around you. You know, you're putting other people in danger. And even if you shouldn't be required to do so by law, shouldn't your conscience require you to do that? That's my message to people. It's like, you know, I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's so, and when you compile on the fact that this virus is quite obviously more deadly than the flu and affects more people in different age groups, it just becomes so obvious that there's just no reason not to. Now, of course, there's different kinds of masks and stuff, but just wear a 99-cent bandana, and it's not going
to... But that's what I'm saying. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how serious it is or how serious it isn't or how serious you think it is or what you think masks do. Listen, at this point, again, it's very clear. Again, I keep going back to this. Perception matters. Whether you believe that to be, whether you believe what the doctors say or what the media says about the virus, perception of it matters. And it's very clear that the college football world and the NCAA and the conferences, they're taking this seriously. We are in danger of losing it. So that should wake you up and say, look, they don't agree with me, but you know what? If I want this entertainment, I have to conform to how what they feel, right? And how they're looking at these numbers. And that's my big issue with it. So I think we're in agreement on that. How did I just make up a word? I don't get it either. And I just hope that at some point, whether that be, I think it has to be now. You know, I think I've read stats like 70% of, you know, people, if they 70% wore masks, then this thing would go away. So, you know, I don't know how much it'd go away, but I tell you, it would go away enough for sports. I'll tell you that.
Well, it would bring it down under the threshold of hospitals being packed, which is the golden threshold where you start to have real problems like Italy saw, where they had a death rate that was approaching like, 7 to 10% or something. I mean, it was insane.
Yeah, but they've gone to normal. They've come back to normal.
They have, but they had such a terrible time with it for a while.
Well, you know what, though? They're not as bad of a time as the U.S. has had.
Well, I'm talking about death rate only.
Okay, but not as total deaths, though. No, but it doesn't really matter about death rate. It doesn't really matter about death rate. Talk about total deaths.
If we had the type of overflow of the hospitals here that they had there, our death rate would be really, really bad. And we're keeping it. The key is to keep enough ICU beds open for these people who need the care. So by wearing the mask, you keep that number under the threshold.
They have mitigated it over there to where people aren't even getting sick with it now.
Well, they locked everything down completely.
Well, I'm not here to talk about what measures should be taken from a governmental standpoint. You know, we're not here to talk, but I'm just saying that people here have not taken it. People here have not done the simple things. And that's what's going to cost us football and basketball this fall and winter if people don't take it more seriously. I mean,
I have heard this a few times, and there's truth to this, that wearing a mask, you know, especially depending on what you're doing, is going to affect your breathing. So what I'd say to that is somebody with asthma, which I don't have trouble breathing normally, but somebody with asthma, I can understand that sentiment. So here's what you do. Don't wear if you're just wearing a cloth face covering, don't wear a thick, heavy duty mask that somebody made. Just wear a bandana. You know, if you have one layer of a bandana, a 99-cent bandana from Walmart, the thing is super thin. Okay, you can breathe through it very easily, but it's going to stop droplets from coming out of your mouth. So at very minimum, just wear that. And, you know, I've done that. I don't have any trouble with breathing. But some of these heavier masks that you see people wearing, especially custom-made ones, they are too thick, and you can't really breathe air through them at all. So that could be part of what is turning some people off from wearing masks, and that could be easily fixed.
All right, let's transition our conversation. We know the big concern right now is this virus, whether we're going to get football in. People need to take it serious. They've got to wear masks, got to do, you know, mitigate this thing. And let's get back on the football field and talking about the sports we love. But the University of Iowa's got a secondary concern right now, and it may actually be their primary. I don't think it is. I think it's their secondary concern because of the revenue behind college football. But we know this big backlash due to claims of poor culture, especially among African-American athletes. Many have come out in the past 2 months, month and a half, and said poor things about Chris Doyle, who's now gone. We know Iowa settled with Chris Doyle for over $1 million. He's gone. And there have been some claims against Kirk Ferentz, more claims against Brian Ferentz. Hush Blackwell is a law firm down in Kansas City investigating the situation right now. But according to most players that have come forward here for the university, current players, Kayvon Merriweather, Ivory Kelly Martin, Brandon Smith, Keith Duncan, guys that have basically said, look, things are getting better here. And they recognize a change. And most players have not been on Kirk Ferentz. But we have the privilege of interviewing and having a very special guest on our show today, and that is former Iowa football wide receiver Clinton Solomon. I think most longtime Hawkeye fans will remember Solomon, one of the best receivers to play under Ferentz. I think there's no question about that. A guy who earned second-team All-Big Ten Conference honors. And we talked to Amari Spivey here several weeks back. He's a guy who had to go to Iowa Central Community College because of academics. Solomon did the same thing. Both guys largely successful at Iowa. So unique situations because they did go through struggles. So I thought it'd be interesting to talk to Clinton. And we have the privilege of welcoming Clinton Solomon onto the show right now. One of the greatest receivers to play in the Kirk Ferentz era. I think there's no doubt about that. We went through some of his accolades just a moment ago. Clinton, thanks for joining us today. I know we've got a lot to talk about. Let's get right down to it. I kind of just wanted to catch our listeners up on where you're at right now. I mean, obviously, this pandemic is kind of throwing a wrench into everybody's schedule. But last I knew, you were with the Texas Revolution. Can you kind of just talk to our listeners a little bit about what you're doing right now with your career?
As of right now, man, I'm just now getting out of shoulder surgery. My last game, my last outing. In the 2019 playoffs, I tore my rotator cuff going over the wall. So I just did that June 10th of last year, and I was just released from my doctor, Dr. Levy, about maybe 2 weeks ago. So I'm fully recovered, and I'm good. Back to training, back to lifting weights and running around. Nothing major, though. Still waiting on the Arena League to jump back out there and try to give it one more year before I just call it quits altogether.
So when's this season scheduled to begin? When does the Indoor Football League start?
2021. They're not going to have the season this year. Okay. They're going to next season.
Is that a tough thing to – I'm sure this is probably your longest break without having organized football since, what, before high school? I mean, how hard is that to know that you're not playing football competitively for that long?
Yeah, man, it's been a long time. I don't know. I guess getting myself ready for retirement without having football as a physical. But it's always going to be part of my life. I'm coaching a Pee Wee football team. My little boy, he's 5 years old. His name's Kingston.
You a wide receiver?
No, man, he's a – the crazy thing about it, he's actually going to start a quarterback like his dad did. I was a quarterback. I moved to receiver when I got to Iowa. So we'll see how he does. He's with me right now. So,
did you know you were moving to receiver when you came to Iowa, or was that something that happened once you got there?
That kind of just happened. I didn't expect to move to receiver. crazy thing was the competition I seen with Jason Manson and Scott and Brad Banks, and those guys, pretty quarterbacks. You know, I was an athlete playing quarterback, so the transition was easy for me to make. So it was a no-brainer for me because I wanted to play right away as well.
So you didn't have a problem with that when you got on campus and wanted to make that change?
When I seen the playbook for a quarterback and then the playbook for a receiver, I figured it would make life easier for myself.
Sure. So we had Amari Spivey on here a few weeks ago, and he talked about his route to Iowa. I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, you both attended Iowa Central. Sort of a unique route, but talk a little bit about that. I mean, that had to have been a challenge, but how did that kind of prepare you for Big Ten play and playing at the University of Iowa?
Well, you know, my freshman year, the year that I actually played my sophomore years when I went to JUCO, and having that 1 year experience at Iowa kind of helped me out as far as going to Iowa Central. I knew it was a business thing for me as far as just getting my grades back together. I really wasn't too much worrying about the football part of it, but I played football there because, you know, it was just, you know, it was something I wanted to do. I had fun doing it, but my main goal was to get my grades back and get back to Iowa. So always had my goal settings to come back to school there. It wasn't, you know, it really wasn't a hard transition. The hardest thing was getting adapted to not having all the luxury that I had at Iowa and not being able to, you know, do the things that I was able to do and just knowing that I was there for academics.
One of the things that we know has come up here recently at Iowa is how difficult it is for African-American athletes to transition to life in Iowa City. Can you talk a little bit about that from your own personal experience? I mean, how difficult was that for you to acclimate yourself to that culture?
Man, I'm going to be honest with you. I was ignorant to the matter of the black and white thing. I really didn't pay attention to that. I grew up with a mother that, you know, taught me that color didn't matter. You know what I'm saying? I understood my skin color. I understood how to. I guess my mom, I guess I can just say that I was raised to adapt to an environment no matter where I was at. Did I see racial things when I was in school? To be honest with you, it probably was. I just probably was, like I said, naive and ignorant to it, where I didn't know. I was just an 18-year-old kid that wanted to go play football and, you know, be a part of a big major university. So I really didn't look at the black and white thing. I really didn't pay attention to those type of things. I knew that coming from where I came from, you know, I didn't really see too many whites growing up, but I adjusted to Iowa just like I adjusted to Fort Worth, Texas. And just me being a human being and being respectful to my elders and just knowing the rights and wrong. Like I said, did I go through the racial things? I was blind to it if I did. I couldn't tell you if I did, if I didn't. I really didn't care. So to speak of saying that, I don't want to say I didn't care, you know, about my race. It's just I didn't know or didn't think about the black and white thing. I was so more to worry about just school and football.
That's a very professional approach to life at age 18. You know, it seems like over the past month with all these players that have come forward, the common theme, it seems to be, there's definitely been at least an unconscious bias. I know that's a word people like to use, but it seems to be the common thread at Iowa. What was your relationship like with Chris Doyle? I mean, we all know from stories, and again, I've not been in the program, so I can't personally attest to it, but the common theme is dude was just tough and sometimes crossed some lines. I mean, what was your relationship with Chris Doyle like?
As a freshman, like I said, I was naive. When I went to Iowa Central and I came back to Iowa, leaving Iowa Central, he made it tough for me. He made it to the point where you was going to earn everything you lost. You need to earn our respect back. You need to earn our trust back, you know. So he made it hard for me as far as the racial slurs. When I got older, I paid attention to it more. I'm not saying that he directly towards me individually or one on one, but as far as like favoritism towards the white athletes, I don't want to go into more depth of it, but we had situations where you knew if you was another athlete or another skin color, you would have been able to do certain things or get away with certain things. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. But like I said, my mindset, and I didn't look at, I hate to use it, I didn't care, because I do care. It was just the mindset that I had then. I was just an athlete trying to play football, man, trying to get to the next level. And, you know, that was just where my mind was. The things that Doyle shot at me, the things that I seen or heard, I was able to, you know, block it off and keep moving. Would I have attacked it different now? I'm pretty sure I would have, but then we didn't have, it wasn't as big as it is now. I'm not saying it didn't go on, but it wasn't as open as it is right now.
Sure.
It's not a hot topic like it is now.
You know, you saw white players being treated a little bit overboard by Coach Doyle, but you did see a difference between how he treated white players and how he treated black players. There was a different standard for each.
Yeah, I mean, everybody had he had standards for each and every player, but you can tell he handled certain players differently. Let's just say that, you know, and the ones that he handled, you want to say carefully with, was the white guys. The ones that, not to say he didn't care too much about us, but he didn't go that extra mile for us as he would. Like I said, man, Doyle was not a bad coach. He wasn't a bad guy. I just, you know, some people have certain things about them that you might not just like, but you still know how to deal with that person. And that's just how I was raised. You deal with people accountable. I'm able to deal with some people's negativity. And the negativity that he brought to me, I was able to block and keep moving forward. What these kids are bringing out and saying now, I can't attest for that. I mean, I wasn't in school with those guys. I didn't go to school, but all I can say is when I was in school, we had a tight locker room, black and white. We was all close, you know, close together. Ed Hinkle and Matt Malloy, them were some of my good friends. Chad Green was definitely one of my coolest teammates I ever played with. And so Drew Tate, you know, I can go on and on, but we all had good relationships. But, you know, you still knew that you was a black athlete and you was a minority, so you had to handle it.
What was your relationship like with Kirk, with KF, as it seemed like a lot of players refer to Coach Ferentz as?
Kirk, man, Kirk really didn't – I mean, when he came to Fort Worth, you know, I got attached to him. He really wasn't I didn't really have too many one-on-ones with Kirk Ferentz, you know. I mean, we had our moments, we talked, but he was just a good guy. He was an all-around coach. He made you feel, you know, wanted. To be honest with you, I can feel the question coming on about his son, so just get right into it. I never would have thought that, you know, Ferentz growing up being his teammate, yeah, I knew that he was but his dad wasn't nothing like that, you know. I don't know if he was that type of guy because his dad was the head coach on the team or what, but Coach Ferentz was a great guy to me. He didn't do no wrong or say no wrong to me. I just feel like a lot of things that happened in school when I was there, guys that like Brad Banks, there's no reason in my mind, I feel like he should have got drafted. Why he didn't get drafted, it's a lot of rumors to that, you know, a lot of rumors to that. So it's a lot of things I can go in about, but Coach Ferentz himself, he was a great guy to me, a great coach to all of us when we were there, and we had fun with him.
I know this investigation into the program is continuing, and you know, speculating on it wouldn't do anybody any good. But how much of a burden or responsibility do you think the head coach shares when something like this happens? I mean, I know that your perspective is a little bit different than other players, but I mean, this did happen under his watch. But I mean, how much responsibility should he take on this?
The relationship that Doyle and Ferentz has, you would think he has a lot to do with it, because things didn't run. It was like they ran the show. Those who ran the show. We was with Coach Doyle a lot we was with Coach Doyle more than we with our regular coaches. So to say that Kirk didn't know or Kirk didn't have any control of what was going on, I wouldn't say he didn't know at all. That I can't say anymore, because they worked together hand in hand, and he had to know something about certain things, you know, especially with these young kids, the way they were speaking out and saying things about Kirk Ferentz, he had to know something.
Yeah. What about Ken O'Keefe? I mean, he was the OC when you were there. I mean, what was your relationship like with Coach O'Keefe?
Ooh, man, O'Keefe I'm going to be honest with you. The only coach I got along with on a day-to-day basis was Lester Herb, you know, Coach Herb and Coach Parker. Those, and both for the Parkers, really. And Aikens, Coach Ron Aikens. I cannot forget about him. But I was close to all those guys. But me and O'Keefe, I was in his quarterback room for, a week, and I got out of there. So I really didn't have too much with him.
Talk about a little bit about change. I mean, how does Iowa move forward? I think, you know, again, we're speculating. I don't think Kirk Ferentz is losing his job over this. Doesn't sound like you think he should.
Nah, he would. And I don't think he should, because he can't control another man's action or another man's way of being or how he lives, you know. He can only control what he does. He can control the people that he put around his players. So I feel like he should take, you know, more cautions of to the players, the people he bring around. Which I know he'll do a better job with that. But I don't think he should lose his job. I think he's been a great leader to the program. He showed them that he can win, and he has changed a lot of lives, whether people believe it or not, black and white, Mexican guys at all. So, honestly, I just feel like, you know, they just, you know, just like everybody else, just judge character a little bit better. Do your best you can. But at the same time, you're still not going to be able to weave all the bad apples out. You're still going to have some there. So once you hear about it, just address it and don't let it prolong. I just feel like a lot of stuff in college football and around the world just be swept on the rug because people don't want to take accountability of what their wrongness is. So.
Right.
It'll get better, man. I really feel like we're going to get better as a whole.
Not, you know, kind of taking away from this pandemic for a second. If you were on this 2020 Iowa football team, would this situation galvanize you, or do you think it would negatively affect the locker room?
If you're asking the guy that is the man and the person that I have became now, no, I wouldn't let that affect the locker room. Me knowing that I have become a true leader. A lot of arena football teams, and with the mindset I have now, I wouldn't let this divide our locker room. If anything, it'll make it stronger. I feel like with today's kids, the athletes now, the younger guys that's coming up on this 2020 team, they just need to come together and just make it to the point that they understand we're all there together, no matter what color they are. This is all about football. This is about wins and losses, nothing else. When you come together in sports, it's a competitive thing. It ain't about who's who and who's what, you know what I'm saying? So to answer your question, it wouldn't be negative to me. I really use this as a gainer to make our team stronger. I feel like you can really build on this. And my message to the young guys, to the young Hawkeyes, is don't let this distract y'all. Don't let this divide y'all. If anything, bring everything out, put it all out there, and then build from it. Make the bond stronger, to be honest.
Just speaking from my own perspective, I freaking love football. And one of the reasons is, just like with basketball, it brings people of color, white people together. There is no color in sports. And I agree with you. It's we need football. We need basketball. We need sports this season.
We need sports, period, man. We need all organized sports, period, because, like I said, I got a young man right here. He's a black African male, and I got another little boy, so I want my boys to grow up and just know the camaraderie of sports is a blessing. It's something that, you know, we can gain from. It's not this racist stuff is really making me mad. You know what I'm saying? Because my kids, both of their mothers are white. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of bothering me, but I just hope everybody come together, man. I appreciate you reaching out to me for real.
Last question, Clinton. We have a football season this year. I know it's hard to predict what this virus is going to do. I saw you were wearing a mask. You're doing your part. We're trying to do ours here in Iowa, but I mean, are we going to have a season this year? Are we going to have in the fall? Are we going to have in the spring? What's going to happen here?
And the way it looks, I mean, we might have a football season. Just it sucks that we won't get the big games in college no more. You know, they talking about playing all conference games, so we won't get to see the USC's and Ohio State's and Bama play, you know. But like I say, football is football. So I'm praying that the football guys touch everybody and give us football. Especially the NFL season. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be an awesome NFL season. So I'm blessed and hope to have it.
No Cy-Hawk game this year, but
Sucks, man.
For us up here in Iowa, man, we have no state fair this year and no Cy-Hawk game. So Iowa's not doing too well right now. But
Iowa Nebraska game.
Hey, let's hope, right? We can only hope. That's towards the end of the year. So hopefully we can hold on and get this virus somewhat behind us. I mean, if you were a player right now, would you feel comfortable playing college football? It's so much different than professional. I mean, would you be comfortable in that environment with the elderly coaches and, I mean, everything, the spread right now?
I'm going to be honest with you. Yes, because the simple fact of the way we take care of our body as a young guy, I know it's crazy to say this, but I was coughing and sneezing months ago, you know what I'm saying? And to say I got corona, whatever this disease or virus is, I mean, I feel like my grandma said, when you was coughing or you was congested, I gave you rubber tussin. So you go take some rubber tussin, you'll be out. So I really feel like these guys take care of their bodies. These coaches got the right programs for these, you know, to get their nutrients and vitamins in them. So they healthy. They'll be okay.
So let me just clarify, you're not advocating Robitussin as the vaccine, right?
No, it's not the vaccine. I'm not saying that, but at the same time, man, I really don't feel like I don't know. We gotta be careful and we gotta be cautious. So
I got
whatever
you.
Works.
Hey man, Clinton, we really appreciate you coming on. It's been a pleasure catching up with you and if you're willing, we'd love to have you back, hopefully talking about football this fall.
Hey, man, yeah, anytime. I'm on Skype. I'm going to keep it now. But we here, and whenever you want to reach out to me, I'm down for it.
All right, man. Keep the family safe. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Stay blessed.
All right, you as well. Bye-bye. Robitussin. Robitussin. No, all after aside, we really appreciate Clinton coming on our show. And again, you know, we had Amari on a few weeks ago. Very unique perspective. And I'd have to say the same about Clinton Solomon. I just, you know, you can tell the maturity on this guy. You know, we talked about him, you know, as a college player, happened to go to Iowa Central, and that was like back in 2002 or in 2012. That's 18 years ago. We forget how long Kirk Ferentz has been here and how long it's been since Clinton Solomon wore a Hawkeye uniform. But your reaction overall to what Solomon had to say, not only about the program, but the coronavirus and the situation we're currently in.
Well, the Robitussin comment's interesting because I think I kind of predicted this in my own mind, I think, months ago, but I think that some more common drugs might actually work on this thing. And we've seen that with the steroid they're using now. But anyways, as far as his mindset, I mean, he was obviously brought up right as far as, you know, dealing with adversity. Not that anyone should have to go through stuff, but he had the mindset where anything he did go through, he was going to get through it no matter what. So, yeah, it's an interesting perspective. It kind of, to me, and it's hard to say, I mean, there may have been players from that era, like you said, it was, you know, 18 years ago, or a little less when he was at Iowa, but there may have been players that had problems back then, but it just seems like stuff like this has gotten so much worse in the last 10 years. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I've always chalked it up to more as just being a naive kid, but it seems like things have just gotten worse as far as, you know, racial disparities and social issues and stuff like that, whereas back then it just didn't seem like it was on people's radar so much. So
yeah, I mean,
interesting to hear from a guy.
And I don't want to, you know, rehash or extrapolate on what Clinton was saying just about, you know, how he viewed certain things that were said by Coach Doyle and other coaches. But, you know, one thing that I took from that is similar along the same lines as what you were bringing out. You know, he's looking back in hindsight at some of these things and seeing, yeah, I mean, these things, I can see where some players looked at this from a racial perspective. But at the time, he was so engulfed in football, he just wasn't focusing on that. And like I said in the interview, that's, to me, you can't get any more professional than that. Because like you said, dealing with adversity, is it right? No. But he had to do what he had to do. And, you know, I think in the end, and we didn't talk a whole lot about some of his teammates, but he did talk about Chad Greenway and some of his good friends that were on those early 2000 Iowa Hawkeye teams. And, you know, these guys are fighting for their brothers out in the field. And, you know, it sounds like he had a good relationship with Kirk Ferentz. I agree with you. I think it's a different time, different era. But I think it was pretty clear Clinton Solomon doesn't want Kirk Ferentz fired.
Yeah, I think that was pretty clear. I mean, you know, he did say that, obviously, which is interesting, and we've kind of suspected this, but, you know, what Doyle was doing is not unknown by Kirk. You know, I can't remember who said it, but somebody wrote something, I think, recently that said that maybe it was one of the players, that if you think that Kirk Ferentz doesn't have his finger on the pulse of everything that goes on in Iowa City, you're mistaken. And I think that's obviously true of his team and his staff. So as far as how much of what he knew was going on with Doyle, you know, we don't know how much maybe Doyle hid what he did, what he said, and, you know, disparaging little comments that he made from Kirk. We don't know any of that, but yeah, it was pretty clear that he definitely didn't want to see KF get fired.
Where do you go from here? I think we're looking for some results from this investigation by the Hush Blackwell law firm in Kansas City. I don't think we can make a whole lot of statements or conclusions based on, I don't want to say there's two sides to every story, and hopefully this investigation sheds some light. There's obviously got to be some repercussions for Brian Ferentz. I mean, and I think there's probably going to have to be some repercussions for Kirk. I don't know what that is, because like you said, you can't just plead ignorance on this thing. I mean, he and Kirk Coach Doyle, everybody we've talked to, everybody we've heard from has reiterated that those guys were, those two guys kind of ran the program. So I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. The good news is, and Clinton brought this out, it doesn't seem like anyone really, well, I shouldn't say anyone. Most people don't want Kirk Ferentz fired. They don't think he should be fired. There needs to be change to this program. It seems like from, the past few weeks, again, it's going to be a months-long and probably years-long process, but it seems like positive changes are being made. Current players have talked about how much more comfortable they are in the Iowa facilities now that Coach Doyle is gone. And so I think, we just kind of have to wait and see where this thing goes. I just think it's such a weird time with Iowa football, with having this pandemic. We're waiting to hear what's going to happen on, as far as college football being played or not being played. Same with college basketball. We're waiting to hear on this decision from Luka. And then we're waiting for the results of this investigation, which could determine who Iowa's offensive coordinator is. Some people think that Kirk Ferentz could be in danger of losing his job. I don't think he is. But all these things we're waiting on, it's just a really odd time. Normally, July is not that newsworthy. But certainly this year, with everything happening outside of sports and how it's affected the sports world, and then with racial claims and culture claims at Iowa, it's just a weird time.
Yeah, I mean, nothing's been normal for this year, pretty much. It's almost like, feels like you're in the Wizard of Oz and just keeps going on and on, and maybe you'll wake up from it eventually. But it's just been crazy. One thing I did get from that interview that I've heard before multiple times now is how these players don't seem to have, the couple that I'm thinking of, at least, don't seem to really have much of a relationship at all with Kirk Ferentz. I mean, they don't have hardly, like Clinton said, he pretty much never had any one-on-one time with him. And football is such a different sport than a lot of other sports. It's kind of hard to imagine a head coach being kind of a detached oversight figure almost, where the players aren't really in contact. And maybe, I'm sure that's different by position. I think the quarterback probably has a pretty close connection to him, for a good reason, but it's just an interesting perspective, because I wouldn't have really thought that, I guess, before all this. So just something else I learned.
And we do want to have Clinton Solomon back on the show, and he's expressed that he's more than happy to come back on here. And again, we got to talk football. We just got to talk sports, actual sports. We don't want, nobody's trying to sweep this investigation under the rug or consequences that are going to come of it. We're not trying to sweep the virus under the rug. We just, would you agree with us? We need sports back. As Clinton brought out, we need it back for so many reasons. I don't know. I don't really know what else to say. It's just, it seems like Groundhog Day over and over and over again. It's just this routine, and it's all the same at this point.
Yeah, it's, I think sports are even more important right now than maybe a lot of people do, just because I think, especially talking about myself, but I think this is probably true for a lot of younger guys, you really need sports. Like, without competition and sports in your life, I think there's something about having testosterone that needs an outlet like that. And if you don't have that, sometimes it can get funneled into a different direction. And it makes me wonder, with a lot of the stuff that's happened as far as, just unrest in general, if having some sports around wouldn't help calm that stuff down a little bit, and give an outlet to some of that energy, you could say. So I think sports are definitely very important now. I'm hoping that NBA will help a little bit.
And think about what Clinton said too, just about, you got a world full of prejudice and discrimination, and not that it's not ever can't happen in sports, but guys get on the field. I don't want to bring this is such a totally off subject, but do you remember last year, the Iowa-Illinois game, and you came over to our place to watch that game? I remember the Iowa, I'm talking basketball, final game of the year. In fact, the last game we watched, because March Madness got canceled, the conference tournaments got canceled. Remember at one point, the that was maybe, I don't know why I always say this, but some of my favorite Iowa games in my memory are games that Iowa lost. Iowa-Michigan State football, 2015. Iowa-Illinois last year, basketball. Iowa-Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament, I think it was 2000, 13. You know, just games that stand out in my mind. You know, not the games that Iowa's won don't, but, you know, Iowa, Penn State 2017 football. I could go on and on, but do you remember that game, Iowa, Illinois? And C.J. Frederick was trying to come off a screen and got held, and he kind of pushed off on the Illinois defender and got called for an offensive foul. And they kind of were talking to each other, and they got a double technical, I think. And I'm talking about C.J. Frederick and the other Illinois guy. And then all the way across the floor at midcourt, you've got Connor McCaffrey and I don't know if it was – that wasn't Feliz, Andres Feliz. I can't remember who it was. Connor McCaffrey and whoever was guarding him had knocked the ball out of his hands, and Connor shoves him, and the guy kind of – or no, I think it was Connor kind of goes like this with his elbow. And then 2 seconds later, do you remember this, though?
I remember it vaguely.
Let me see if I can find it here. Two seconds later. What's that?
Seems like a long time ago.
2 seconds later, they're in each other's face. But you know what I love about that? And I'm not advocating getting each other's face. But it's one of those things that it had nothing to do with race. It had nothing to do with color. Had nothing to do with discrimination. It's just guys getting competitive on the basketball court. And they're not going to take it off the court. And I just remember them talking about it afterwards. It was like, yeah, it happened. You know, we don't like them. They don't like us. But it stays on the court. It's nothing personal. And you love to see that passion for the game. You love to see that seriousness, especially for such an important game. At the time, we thought that was a game that was going to have huge implications on the rest of the season, and it would have had the season continued. We love to see that drive. And again, it's not based on race. So I don't know. Let's kind of get your thoughts on that. I mean, is that not one of the brilliant things about football, basketball, all sports alike?
Yeah, I mean, I've probably talked about this before, but, you know, to me, sports is a bit of an outlet. You know, you're going out there with your brothers, and that's why loyalty is so highly valued. And you see this in pro sports a lot, especially with the NBA, it seems like. But when a guy leaves, there's so much there's so much emotion surrounding that when a guy leaves a team, even if he has, you know, objectively good reasons to do so. I think it's kind of like a mini version of that. So when you're going out there to beat this other team, you know, it doesn't matter what color your skin is or anything like that. You all have the same exact goal. And, you know, all that kind of gets thrown out the window. So sports is a good kind of a good glimpse into what it looks like to not really worry about race. You know, it doesn't really matter. You could have guys totally covered from head to toe with protective gear and in football, and it doesn't matter what color of skin is. It just matters how well they play the game and if they can play well with their teammates and beat the opponent. So it's definitely a nice reprieve from reality in this country these days.
And might I say this as well, and then again, this is totally off topic. We just got done talking to Clinton Solomon about the Iowa football program, but as far as basketball, I'm going to sit right here and say, and maybe I just live in the moment, but I said some things a year and a half ago about Connor McCaffrey that I was flat out wrong about. Flat out wrong. All right. And I'm going to sit here on the show and admit I was flat out wrong. I said McCaffrey. I'm not going to sit here and say he's a Big Ten point guard, because I think that I was vehement about him not being a Big Ten point guard, but I really didn't know how he fit in on this team after seeing him as a redshirt freshman. I am totally, totally sold on him now. I mean, are you in agreement on that? I mean, to me, he is the definition of a Big Ten player now. And maybe, again, I'm living in the moment and I'm a homer, blah, 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 but I was not sold on Connor McCaffrey a year ago at this time, and I am 100% bought in now.
Well, I think that's a lot to his credit, because he's figured out how to be efficient with the tools he has, and he has
glaring deficiencies compared to a lot of pro-level athletes that you see in college. But, you know, he reminds me of a guy, and I know he's left-handed, which is probably part of it, but reminds me of a guy like Joe Ingles, who's just who plays, he's more valuable to his team than he is by himself. It's like having teammates around him multiplies his ability. Like, if you took his ability, Connor McCaffrey's ability, and put him one-on-one against anybody, he's not going to do very well. You know, he's not athletic compared to a lot of these guys and yada yada, but when you put him on a team and he's able to figure out his role, he's terribly efficient, and he's able to facilitate and knock down open shots, and that's basically what his job is, and he did very well at it. So as long as he's not pushed out of his role, I think he's a good player to have.
Let's watch this play. Obviously a lot of contact. Watch Frederick down at the bottom of the screen, number 5 there. He's getting held, and he pushes off right there, gets called for the foul, and then you got what's going on at center court. And I have no problem with either of it. I have no problem with the guy from Illinois. I got no problem with it from Connor. You got Frazier and Frederick talking. And then watch Connor. Hey, I'm telling you, that might have been, let's watch that in an instant replay, as Jim Carrey and the Cable Guy would say. No, I'm sorry. Jim Carrey and Ace Ventura are basically every other movie he's ever made. As we take a look back at here at this again, doesn't that sort of just endear you to Connor? I don't know. It's something about it. It's just like, I don't know. I guess for me, you look at a guy like that who we've been kind of hard on, and a lot of Iowa fans were hard on him after that first year. It does sort of endear you to him as a player, because you see how much he cares about the team and about them winning. And he's not, you know, you talked about his intangibles and what he brings to the team. He's also just a tough guy. I mean, you can just tell he's got a chip. I mean, I don't have any doubt that, you know, he ain't putting on a show. I really don't. I mean, you saw that video. I don't think he's acting. I think he'd be willing to throw down.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably had it fairly tough, you know, being coach's son. You know, I'm sure they get a lot of crap because they, you know, other people assume that they got that role by, you know, default, by nepotism or whatever. So he's probably got a chip on his shoulder. Kind of like what I mentioned with the Joe Ingles parallel. You know, they remind me of each other because they're both very underrated, undervalued, I guess, but they, you know, they're both kind of came up from the bottom. You know, Joe Ingles is cut by the Clippers, and, you know, Connor's probably had to deal with a lot of trash talk as far as being the coach's pet or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I think he definitely has a chip on his shoulder.
All right. We kind of totally went off track there, but for some reason that came up into my mind, just the whole, you know, again, it's not, sports is, I do think having sports this fall, and I hope, we hope that these numbers can go down and we can feel sort of normal watching. So I do think sports are going to happen. We've already seen golf and NASCAR and all these different sports, but football, basketball, we need those sports this fall, and we'll keep hanging tight. Everybody wear your mask, do your part. I know it's tough, but do your part. It's all we can do. And hopefully as we get closer and closer to September, things are going to start looking a little bit better, and we'll be able to start actually previewing a season confidently. Tons of thanks to Clinton Solomon for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks to him. I can't think of much else.
We will be back next week with Week 122. We'll talk NBA bubble. We'll talk Luka Garza's decision, because that'll probably be the last show before his big announcement. And so we'll be back, and we will talk everything hoops, including college, and a preview of the NBA bubble, which finally we get some basketball. Even if it's pro basketball, it's not Hawkeye sports, it's pro basketball. Hopefully we'll be able to see a couple Hawkeyes with Jared Utoff and Tyler Cook having come to agreements with their respective teams. For Alex Bratta, Clinton Solomon, I'm Corey Bratta. Thanks for joining us for Week 121 here on Bratta's Branded Thoughts. We'll talk to you next week. Go Hawks.